Imagine your university teacher is presenting the latest results of a current research project. You can read the slides of their presentation, but you do not hear the discussion that has just been sparked in the large group. This is only one example of what people with hearing impairment experience in the lecture hall. Last year, we talked in this podcast about accessibility from a perspective of those affected. Today, we will change the perspective. We dive into research. What is going on in research? Can AI help to integrate people with disability in everyday academic life? My guest today is Sarah Ebling. She will answer this and further questions. She is a professor of computer linguistics and specialized in accessibility. This is Setting Sails, Navigating AI in Higher Education, a podcast about rethinking teaching to create better education for everyone, with or without AI. I'm Alexandra Jansky, leader of the Innovation and Digital Education team at the University of Zurich. Sarah Ebling, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
How did you come up with the topic of your research, accessibility? Was there a trigger moment or a point where you said, like, this is what I want to do?
For me, it was really, it started out with a linguistic interest in sign languages. So I wanted to learn languages that work entirely differently from the spoken languages that we're more familiar with. And so I started to learn sign language, and then I discovered that there's very little research on automatically processing sign languages, and that in terms of the methods, actually, we would have the pieces together with the research contributions, obviously, that are necessary, but that very little had been done. And at that point, there was a glaring gap in the research landscape when it came to assistive technologies and contributions from natural language processing, which is our discipline, as you said, computational linguistics. So that's what I started out to enter into. And in the meantime, it's become quite a popular field now.
That's very interesting. So we also will talk about sign language and the problems coming with that a bit later on. Now I would like to talk a bit about the digital turn. So there was like a digital turn and this gave hope to many people with disabilities that it would help them to access education, work and like other everyday things. But after all, the digitalization also made things much faster, which can be a problem for them as well. So this acceleration can be a challenge for people with disability. And I was wondering, what would you say? Were their hopes fulfilled, or is it more like that there were more hurdles?
Yeah, it's a very, very good question. Because like you said, with these developments, there's often also new barriers that are introduced. And especially the keyword hope, obviously, is very important, because especially people with disabilities have had a past of getting their hopes raised up and then expectations not met after all. So many technological advances that promise to, you know, provide a breakthrough in terms of access to these different target groups. I would say the digital turn definitely obviously brought improvements, right? But also some additional barriers, such as for blind people and people with visual impairments, the touch screens were a major barrier for a very long time, because you lost this haptic guide on your mobile device. And so that's something that clearly presented a barrier. And there have been some very nice solutions to this in the meantime. And then probably also not directly related to the digital turn, but to COVID, to the pandemic, is the fact that a lot of meetings took place online, right? And so we had video conferencing calls, and those softwares were actually largely inaccessible to many people with disabilities for a long time. And this now has also changed in the meantime.
That's very good to hear. Of course, with somebody without disabilities, you sometimes do not realize what kind of hurdles.
Right, exactly. And that's a very good point. Is a lot of times awareness is simply not there, right, of the barriers. And that's why it's so important to include the target groups also in the research that we perform, because no matter how hard we try, we can never identify all possible barriers.
Mm-hmm. So now there is another turn in the mm-hmm. digitalization. So now we have AI, and mm-hmm. I think this is also a part of your research when it comes to AI. Does it make a difference now, or is it now even a bigger, are there bigger problems now again? Because I can imagine some of the AI is not accessible.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a very similar development to what we had before, where in the broader scope, I think there are definitely a lot of improvements. So, for example, there are vision apps that guide people, blind people and people with visual impairments. So give them not just navigation tools, but also a way of perceiving their surroundings, of knowing what's around them. So that's definitely huge progress. And if we think of, for example, automatic captioning, this works pretty well nowadays. And there's many more of these applications that really provided increased access to different target groups in the context of accessibility. But again, there's the other side where some people have been disadvantaged. And so artificial intelligence techniques can also introduce new barriers, and specifically also the ethical component, I think, is very important in that sense, where we have to be mindful of the fact that especially when we're dealing with mainstream solutions, so for example, automatic speech recognition working for everyone, often the people with disabilities, specific target groups of people with disabilities, are actually left behind. So for example, automatic speech recognition in its mainstream form does not work well for people with speech impairments. And so for those target groups, dedicated models and systems actually have to be developed. And the reason is that we just don't have enough data from these target groups, and the big models are not trained to suit the requirements, and specifically to adapt to the speech patterns of that particular target group.
Very interesting. Thank you. Now let's dive a bit into your research. You're a professor of language, technology and accessibility. You're based in the Department of Computational Linguistics. Your research, as far as I know, focuses on language-based AI techniques for people with disabilities. And what I found is that you are developing a sort of interpreter avatar. Can you tell in a few words what it is? So what are you developing?
Sure. So we work on sign language machine translation mostly, which means that we translate from a spoken language like English or German. And this can also be represented as text, doesn't have to be represented as speech. We translate from a spoken language to a sign language or vice versa. So our group is actually not primarily concerned with the actual appearance, so the digital signers that are at the very end if you translate from spoken language to sign language, but we concentrate more on the core machine translation step, which is basically one step prior to the production step that actually produces the appearance of a synthetic signer. So what we do there is we try and come up with ways in which we can use the best representations of sign language. And there have been different representations suggested over the past years. And more recently, this is heavily influenced by computer vision. So many of the ways that we use to represent sign language as part of these machine translation systems are drawn from the field of computer vision.
I cannot really. Can you give an example of a representation?
Exactly. So for some time, what we used were skeletal representations, which were pose sequences. So they look like stick figures. And this is a mm-hmm. way to come up with a representation that is lower dimensional than a video. So videos are computationally very costly to process because they are high dimensional, both in the spatial sense and also in a temporal sense. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to come up with a lightweight representation of sign language. And here, these stick figures, so these skeletal representations, have actually proven effective because they capture the essence of signing, but not more than necessary.
Very interesting. Thank you for the clarification. Now, I can imagine that this is very challenging because there are translator apps, so I can speak in my mother tongue and my smartphone is translating into Chinese, but I can imagine that there are a lot of challenges when it comes to sign language. Mm-hmm. Can you explore a bit more what the challenges are?
Absolutely. So one of the challenges that we definitely face, because I think primarily the difference is in modality, right? Sign languages take place in the visual modality, whereas the spoken languages that we mentioned, especially if we operate on text, we have several different translation platforms available, right, that work reasonably well. For sign languages, the modality that is different, and this also means that we have less data available. So the approaches that we are pursuing nowadays are neural machine translation approaches, and so this is a sub-field of deep learning, which is in turn part of artificial intelligence. And these neural machine translation approaches, as all of the deep learning approaches that we have, they need lots and lots of data in order to work well. And that's a challenge in any case when it comes to the field of disability. And this is something that actually has a term that has been coined for it, which is the disability data desert. And for sign languages, this is distinctly true, where we don't have a lot of data of involving sign languages, and much of the data that we do have involves hearing signers on television, so hearing signers interpreting spoken language into sign language, for example.
Mm-hmm. And so the data you are talking about would then be videos of people giving sign language, or how can I?
That's right, exactly. So the data consists of videos of signers. And then from those videos, we derive one of the representations that we talked about, for example, those skeletal representations.
Okay, so when you train an AI, you would just feed a lot of videos and then...
Exactly, yep. And typically for a machine translation task, we would need what we call parallel data. So we need pairs of sign language videos and spoken language corresponding sentences. And so that's what the models, the machine translation models, learn from. So they learn to associate the sign language bits with the spoken language bits, and that's how they produce the translations.
Thank you. That's extremely interesting. Thank you very much for the clarification. So just... going a bit back from these techniques, and I'm just wondering, I can imagine a lot of situations where this would be helpful. Can you explore a bit, especially in university and teaching parts, situations, where do you think it would be helpful?
I think it can be helpful in many ways. Where I would like to see it applied first is in cases where the information is pre-recorded, because that's when where these systems currently work best. So live situations are always the most challenging. So if we think of a lecture setting where a university lecturer is presenting and the content is not predictable, these are definitely the most challenging cases. And so what I would like to start with is first pre-recorded material. So let's say if we had a text or an audio that needs to be translated into sign language, that's what we would typically start with first. And in general, so the state of the art of machine translation is not yet at a point for sign languages that is to allow for any fully automatic translation. So we don't have the quality yet to be able to do that.
Okay. You already said that you learned sign language yourself. Would you be able to do a lecture in sign language?
Yes, I think by now I would actually be able to sign a session in sign language. I haven't actually done it now that you say it, but my communication skills now by now should be sufficient.
Wow, very impressive. So Your research is part of a flagship inclusion, like flagship inclusion information and communication technologies, or IICT. This is an innovation program with several accessibility projects. When I entered the website of IICT, I was asked to select languages, different languages, and one of them was also Swiss German Sign Language, standard German, German B1, A2, or A1. This is a bit, for me, interesting. Is this also an aspect of your research project? So like explaining something in simple text, so text simplification?
That's right, exactly. So automatic text simplification is something we work on. And that's exactly what this is about. It's about providing standard language text in simpler alternatives. And the levels that you mentioned are corresponding to those simpler alternatives. So typically it's B1, A2 and A1.
That's very interesting. I was just wondering, for whom is it?
So yeah, that's a very good question. So mostly especially if we simplify into a level of A1, which is the level with the highest simplicity, typically the target groups would be persons with intellectual disabilities. But on the other levels, there are also other target groups, so prelingually deaf persons, for example, persons with aphasia, and also to some extent persons with a migration background. So they're very different target groups. And that's actually also why in the past we used to have just one homogeneous concept of simplified language. But then over time, it became clear that in order to cater for the different requirements of the user groups, this needed to be specified out into individual complexity levels. And that's where this multi-stage concept now comes from.
So thinking about that, when you were say like different people coming from different backgrounds, and there is also, of course, there are like different disabilities. There are like people who cannot hear, like with hearing impairment, people with visual impairment. So in the end, you would need like a mix of many different, modes.
Yeah.
Is it? Because I cannot imagine that this is still happening. Is this still too challenging to do, or what are your...
That's a very good question. I think what you mentioned are the differing requirements, right, according to different user groups. And here, to some extent, they can even be conflicting. So, I mean, if we think about a lecture setting, for example, where bright light is needed in order to allow a person with residual vision to see something, but then this bright light might actually be disturbing for a student with neurodiversity. So that's an important thing to keep in mind, that these requirements can actually be conflicting to some extent. And in terms of providing them all at once, typically what we do is we provide these services in isolation. So this is also the concept of letting the user decide which services they then want to make use of. So this is ideally we would have, like a mobile application, and the user could choose themselves which of these services they would access. And then what actually happens is what you alluded to, is that some people might end up using. So for example, even I sometimes am a user of text simplification, right? Sometimes I enjoy getting a simpler version of a text. So people should be free to choose whatever version, alternative language version suits them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. And now, like, maybe I think today's topic has also a social and ethical impact, mm-hmm, a lot. So it's not only access, but it's also participation. Mm-hmm. So I was just thinking, if more disabled people would or could teach in higher education, it would also broaden the perspective of those who being taught. So what are your thoughts about that?
Oh, absolutely. I think in Switzerland, unfortunately, we're not there yet. This is quite common in other countries, and definitely it's as you said, it broadens the perspective. And it also ties in with what we said before, is that it's not a matter of often it's actually a matter of awareness, right? So you need to be aware of the requirements of certain target groups in order to know what their what these requirements are. And I think from the point of view of participation, it's absolutely essential that the target groups are included in also in university, higher education, teaching.
Absolutely. So what is your vision of the ideal barrier-free university of the future?
For me, it's very important that we get to the awareness that we are missing out on excellence if we're not as inclusive as we can be at a higher education institution. So there are many, many individuals with disabilities who are excellent researchers, or perhaps as at the stage before that, students whose potential we want to exploit. And so it's about unlocking this potential. I think that's the way to look at it. And it's not a coincidence that there were many people with disabilities who became excellent scholars, right, all around the world, some very famous. So that's what I would like to see happening, is to enable access to those groups of scholars.
I hope many people outside are listening to this podcast and taking these to their hearts. I think it's very good last words. So thank you so much for the insight into your research and for, I think, a very exciting conversation.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, audience, for joining us. This is Setting Sails, Navigating AI in Higher Education, a podcast of the Educational Development Team at the University of Zurich in cooperation with LearnNetz, a company that drives innovation in education. My name is Alexandra Jansky. Next time, we will turn our attention to science communication. How can scientific facts prevail in the age of artificial intelligence? Mike Schaefer will be my guest. He's a professor of science communication. We will be back with this next episode very soon, on the 20th of December. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe and let us know what you think, as well as any questions you might have and any topics you're interested in. Just email us to teachingtools@education.uzh.ch. You will find all this information in the show notes. Just take a look. See you soon.